welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or this week, as we're calling it, Dear John and Sarah.
Or Dear Sarah and John. It's an advice podcast where we answer your questions, provide you with dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon. It's a little bit different this week, not only because I'm joined not by my brother, TikTok sensation Hank Green, but by Sarah Urist Green, my spouse, who's also a TikTok sensation.
Right. I started TikToking last week.
I know.
I think I have five.
One of the best text messages I've ever received in my entire life came from Sarah. I was driving home from the office and Sarah texted me, I'm making my first TikTok and I'm not sure if it's good, but I don't want to overthink it. And then 3 seconds later, she texted, but maybe I should overthink it.
?
Which is just a chef's kiss, example of overthinking.
The way that I work is just not internet friendly. Like the internet embraces bold, confident utterances. And I like to really think things over and carefully craft something. And I've really been working against that for years.
Yeah.
And TikTok was a new exploration for me, but it was fun.
I think you're doing a great job.
You can find me at the art assignment.
There you go. Great promo, Sarah. You say you're not good at the internet, but that was some high quality internet advertising.
Thank you.
Speaking of high quality internet advertising, this podcast is available to you in the way that it is at the time that it is, because it is currently, as you are listening to this, assuming that you're listening to it around the time that it was uploaded, it is currently the Project for Awesome, our community's annual 48-hour fundraiser, where 100% of the proceeds go to charity, and you can get lots and lots of different rewards for your donation, including a Project for Awesome exclusive episode of Dear Hank and John, which is one of Hank and I's favorite things to do every year. We only answer questions from people who donated to get that perk or else got the digital download bundle. You can get all 150 of my private TikToks.
Wow.
There's some gold in there, Sarah.
Yeah, I know.
There's 137 real high-quality TikToks and 13.
I've been witness to the creation of a lot of them. And I've also been witness, not to out you here, to some of your rehearsals.
Oh, I do love a rehearsal.
He likes to sort of talk it out.
Well, the way I write is by talking.
Yeah.
And so when I'm writing a TikTok or I'm talking it out.
Does this sound right?
Yeah, I'm trying to see if the arc of it is what I want it to be and all that stuff.
Right.
So you can get lots of different perks only at projectforawesome.com/donate and only during the Project for Awesome. So we are making this as a no-cut special.
That's right.
No cuts because...
No cuts, no apologies.
Because we don't have any time because the Project for Awesome is happening.
Yes.
And we can't...
I've been making perks too, John.
I know. I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
We can't deliver the podcast this late and have edits. So here we are, no cut special, raw and unfiltered. It's the full Sarah and John experience. Sarah has made some amazing perks for this year's Project for Awesome, including...
Yeah, so last year I made a large series of 50, what I call collage poems, which is where I take images and little text clips from my collection of vintage magazines and put them together in these interesting combinations. I am making 20 of those, but I'm also making two new kinds of collages, brand new.
Yes.
One, Star Wars collages.
They're amazing.
We recently repainted our son's bedroom, and he had these Star Wars decals on the ceiling. And when he didn't want them anymore, and so I was pulling them off, and they came off perfectly and cleanly. And I was like, well, this is an opportunity. So I took them into my workspace and sort of slapdash them onto some vintage magazine pages, and I thought they looked really cool. So I've developed those. I think there are 9 of those.
Yeah. Let's not say it was slapdashed. I've seen you working on them, and in fact, it's been dozens of hours for each collage.
So the initial placement of the decal was slapdashed.
Oh, okay. But
then I was able to peel them off
and
re-place them.
They're very good.
And then I also have a series of 20 architectural image collages where I took some prints, not real prints, like, you know, like not super important printouts of some architectural photographs by the photographer Julia Shulman. And I added over top interesting and amusing images from my magazines.
Yeah, so, they're all really cool. You got to check them out at projectfrost.com/donate.
There's something for everyone.
You can see,
if you like funny collages.
You can see examples of the collages at the site. So projectfrost.com/donate is where you go. We're also doing a live stream that goes from Friday at noon Eastern time until Sunday at noon Eastern time. So thanks to everybody in our community for making the Project for Awesome such a big deal. This is the 15th one. We've raised over $12 million for charity. I am so just overwhelmed by what the P4A has accomplished. And thank you. Thanks for being part of it with us. Check out the live stream if you can. Donate if you can. And otherwise, just enjoy the rest of this episode of Dear Hank and John. Beginning with this question from Ella and Leah. Sarah, this question really got me going. Dear John and Sarah, how do you eat salad without looking weird? The lettuce is too big and it doesn't fit in your mouth. And then you have to awkwardly either let the extra lettuce fall back into your bowl from your mouth, or you have to find a way to unawkwardly eat a humongous piece of lettuce all at once, which involves just so much chomping. A salad-y calamity, Ella and Leah. Exclamation point.
This is an excellent question. I have lots of thoughts about this.
Yeah.
Do you want me to go first?
I can go first. Here's what I want to say about it. When I am eating salad, especially when I'm eating like salad where there's whole leaves or large parts of leaves, I think to myself, I am a mammal.
Right.
And I am
like a cow.
I'm like a cow chewing cud. Yeah. I am a mammal eating leaves.
See, I feel like I'm like a dinosaur, like reaching for the tall leaves.
Yes. Yes. Like like looking for the good leaves, like Brontosaurus is, you know.
Right.
I was thinking about this recently, and so I looked up how much Brontosaurus is ate per day. 1,140 pounds of leaves.
Wow.
A day.
Well, that's what they did all day.
Yeah. Do you think they got tired of it? Do you think that there was a sense like how when we're at work, you know,
I gotta like, keep chewing.
Like when I'll give you an example. When I'm in the garden, I love vegetable gardening, but there are definitely times where I'm like, God, this is a lot of work.
Sure.
And I wonder if the Brontosaurus was like, oh my God, I can't believe I have to get up today and eat another 1,140 pounds of leaves.
As opposed to like flipping through TikTok for 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah. I just wonder if the Brontosaurus, like,
if only there was TikTok.
I'm just wondering, do you feel a kind of low-level euphoria because you're doing the thing that you're supposed to do and you're feeding your body? Or do you feel like, God, this is a lot of effort and I just wish I could take a day off, but my body needs 1,140 pounds of leaves?
Okay. Back to the question, however.
Yeah.
This reminds me of one of my favorite moments when I was in grad school, studying art history. There was a very well-known art historian in the department, and I never ran into her. And she was semi-retired at the time, and one day she came into a potential professor's talk that was a lunchtime lecture where somebody who wanted to teach at the school came and like gave a presentation. So we're all in there, lunchtime lecture. In she walks, powerhouse that she is, comes and sits right in the front, brings out a very crinkly bag, pulls out like a plastic clamshell container filled with a giant salad, and she just digs in. It's crunchy. It's loud. There's huge pieces of lettuce going everywhere. And it was really distracting the guy presenting. And like, not only was she intimidating, but she was also eating this ridiculous salad. And like, my thought was like, stop laughing, Sarah. Like, be cool, be cool. But my other thought was, what a power move. You know,
what if you just
eat your salad,
just lean into it,
and you know that you look kind of like a ravenous monster, but you just say like, that's right, I'm eating this salad.
Yeah. You're right. I am a mammal. And yes. I do have to eat things to sustain my departure yes. from chemical equilibrium. And I will not apologize.
And I was told this was a lunchtime lecture.
And so yeah. I will not apologize. Yeah. And if the piece of salad is too big, I will bite mm-hmm. it in half and let the other half drop into my bowl. And if it's not too big, I will try to eat it all at once. And that's who I am.
That said,
yeah.
I don't choose a salad in all situations. First, you want to eat what you actually want to eat.
Right.
Like if you really want to eat a salad and you feel like a salad, great, go for it.
Yeah.
But if you just kind of like need some fuel yeah. for whatever you're doing and you need to be quiet and mm-hmm. you don't and you might be embarrassed with whoever you're with, you know, sandwiches can sometimes also be awkward, but like, think about it, like a bowl of something.
God, I love a sandwich. I wish I had a sandwich. I just realized I haven't right. eaten today and I really want a sandwich.
But that can also be, awkward if it's like really big, you know, when yeah. you're trying to eat it.
Is it going to be weird for you if I order a sandwich right now while you read the next question?
No, but we have sandwich making, John. No.
So I want to quote something you just said because I thought it was so beautiful.
Okay.
When you are hungry, you know what you want.
Oh, okay. And you know. So I am going to proceed.
Question number 4 there.
Onto this question.
Starts, hello, Green Bros.
From Emily. Hello, Green Bros. And I'm assuming you also mean Green Sarah. I don't normally wear makeup, but I have some big interviews coming up. Should I wear makeup to look professional at the interview and then never wear makeup again? Would they think I'm lying? I would love some dubious advice. Why lime backwards, Emily?
This reminds me. So when I first started working at Booklist, Sarah, just before we reconnected and started mm-hmm. talking. That's the other thing that you can get for the Project for Awesome is Sarah and I do an annual podcast, yes. which we just recorded called Like Letters, where we read the emails that we wrote each other back and forth during the year and a half before we started dating. And they're the sweetest, cringiest, most amazing
this
letters.
This year's was particularly cringy.
Oh boy, I could barely get through it.
Which I hope is like impetus for you all to want to...
Yeah, we're genuinely hoping that you forgive us
yeah.
for how cringy it is.
Right. But back to Emily's
yes.
question.
Can I tell you about Booklist?
Okay.
So my first day at my first grown-up job, or like, I don't know, my first full-time job out of school, I went into the office. I'd temped at a bunch of places, and so I was like, whatever. I went into the office. I interviewed with them for like 15 minutes, and I was wearing a nice button-down shirt, and I was wearing pleated pants, as you remember. And I left, and then they hired me, so I came back the next day. And everybody apparently was commenting on how he was such a nice, put-together young man, and he really seems to have his act together. And then I show up the next day, and the way that my boss, Eileen Cooper, would later describe it, she said, I saw you walking in, and you had the front of your shirt tucked in. And I was like, oh, he looks okay. And then you walked past me, and the back of your shirt was not tucked in.
Yeah.
And your pant leg was like inside of your sock. And I was like, well, we'll see.
Yeah.
So should you wear makeup?
Yeah, I think you do need to feel comfortable. So if the makeup is going to make you feel uncomfortable,
good observation.
I wouldn't do it.
Right.
I think you should look put together. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, but I don't think you need to wear makeup.
I don't think you need to wear makeup.
But that so
I don't think that it's because they're going to think you're lying. I think I know that for plenty of interviews, I have worn things that I would never wear.
Yeah.
And like now that I think about it, I'm like, oh.
No, you that doesn't matter. It's not like you're lying. It's more about you being, how are you going to feel comfortable and confident and as unnervous right. as you can feel in that
And if you're
going to
feel like a
situation.
Clown... If you're going to feel like a clown in makeup or like not like yourself, then I wouldn't do it. I am curious right. whether it's a Zoom interview or an in-person interview.
Right.
If it's, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but if it's Zoom, For me personally, I didn't start wearing like, I still don't wear very much makeup, but I did start at some point in my 20s wearing brighter, bolder lipstick. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of makeup otherwise. Mm-hmm. I've never been really capable of doing that well. Mm-hmm. But like the lipstick, like if I applied it carefully and well, it made me feel like I was trying. It made me feel like I had some style and personality,
right,
even if everything else was sort of boring.
Well.
And, or in my mind, whatever. So like, I don't know. I think whatever makes you feel good and confident.
Whatever makes you feel good and confident. I agree. Now, let's move on to this very important question from Anonymous, Sarah.
Okay.
Dear Sarah and John, why are word games like Wordle so fun? And then they signed off DBAFT with a green square and four yellow squares. Very good sign off.
Just very good.
But if you don't know what Wordle is, it's a game that—
They know what Wordle is.
Some people don't. A lot of people play on the internet where you try to guess a five-letter word and people are obsessed with it. And two of the people who are obsessed with it are speaking to you right now.
Yes. And we were late to Wordle.
Not that late. I mean, we've been playing Wordle for almost a month.
Yeah.
We got it.
I felt like I was late to Wordle. I love word games. They, especially Wordle, it's a quick game.
Yes.
I like to play it in the morning after I've had my first cup of coffee.
Right.
And it's like a little achievable something.
Sometimes it's achievable.
But you know, I don't always do well, but it's like, it just sort of like gets my mind going. A lot of other word games are very obsessive and unending. And,
right. Right. Like
we also know about those.
The spell or Scrabble. Sarah and I can fall pretty far down a Scrabble or spelling bee rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But the great thing about Wordle is that it ends. So I have a theory. I mean, I think I know what people love about Wordle, or I think I know what I love about it anyway. Which is that what I love about word games is that I feel frustrated and I don't know how to solve a problem and I feel like confused and a little bit almost annoyed. And then those feelings resolve in pleasure, which is the opposite of how real life feels, which is that I feel confused and frustrated and I don't know how to solve any problems. And that is the situation.
And then you go to sleep and you, and you wake up again and you feel confusion. And yeah. So I think that's probably why. And Wordle is particularly good at being a quickly resolved, enjoyable, mind occupying game.
But it gives you enough of the feeling of frustration that when it resolves, it feels really good.
Yes.
And this is also exactly what I like about writing, is that I feel frustrated and confused and I don't know how to express myself and I can't find language for something. And then it resolves.
Right.
And that feeling of resolution is so pleasurable that I will suffer through almost anything to get it.
Uh-huh.
And that is what writing is for me.
Well, that's like a lot of creative processes.
Yes.
Like some people think that if you're doing any sort of creative enterprise, that it sort of needs to feel good and be totally pleasurable. But most of the artists and makers I know struggle through it. And that struggle is sort of part of the process.
Yeah, there's a great line often attributed to Gloria Steinem, "I don't like writing, I like having written."
Yes.
And I think what I like about having written is having gotten frustrated, having felt overwhelmed, and then at least coming to some sense of resolution about it.
Right. It's actually a lot like when I make my collages.
Yes.
I have this puzzle, like I have an image I really want to use or a phrase I really want to use, and it's not working, it's not quite right, and then it comes together.
Yeah.
And it feels really satisfying, and then I glue it down.
Right.
And it's done.
Yeah. Yeah, that is, I think that's the feeling that we're all after. And so I think sometimes like making creative work just about like, hey, does this give you energy? Does it like fuel your soul? Like,
right.
Is a little bit of an oversimplification because the ways that it fuels my soul are actually quite complicated.
Right. Okay. This next question is from Kay. I was supposed to go on a date with someone from a dating app, and it's been 10 minutes since we were supposed to meet, and she hasn't shown up or contacted me yet. How long do I wait before I can safely say I've been stood up and leave? Not feeling okay, Kay.
It's a tough one. It's been 10 minutes. So let me tell you, Sarah's position on this is going to be different from my position on this.
What's your position?
10 minutes? What is the chance that this person is going to be somebody who can, like, really have a wonderful, meaningful partnership with if they're 10 minutes late to their first date and they don't text to explain why they're 10 minutes late?
Right.
0%.
Yeah.
If you text, that's one thing. I'm still, as you know, still not enough.
No. Well, it depends on how important promptness is to you.
Yeah.
So is that going to be a deal breaker in your relationship? For John, it is.
If every time I go out to dinner with somebody, every time I meet somebody for dinner, I have to spend 15 minutes like at the bar staring into the abyss.
Yes.
Yes. That is going to be a deal breaker for me. If that's
feeling
like the
nervous.
Nature. Yeah. Like feeling rising anxiety, wondering if this person has like, you know, died in a subway accident or something. Yes. Yes. Of course, that would be a deal breaker for me.
Right. Right. I'd probably give it 15.
I don't know. I mean, to me, if they haven't, if they're 10 minutes late and they haven't texted to explain, because on a date, I don't know how dating apps work, but yeah, I assume you can send a message, right?
And be like, hey,
I'm 10 minutes late.
On my way. Sorry. Understand
soon.
If you need to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah.
And yeah, to me, 10 minutes
and it
is
also,
more than enough time.
It also, I mean, I would start thinking like, oh, if I'm okay with them being that late, I'm communicating to them that like, I don't know.
You would start thinking that. I agree.
I would.
You would.
I would
you
be
would.
Like, this is disrespectful.
Right, right, right.
I don't appreciate this.
Yeah.
I'd like to remain in control. And so I'm leaving because that is something I can control.
Yeah.
And then
that's a lot of self-awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I want to be that self-aware.
So I'd try to enjoy the time as if I was there on my own, maybe I'm going to have a drink. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to text a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to write Hank and John about my problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a glass of iced tea.
You know what? I'd probably do exactly what you did.
Yeah.
But now I really want to know what happened.
Well, I think I know what happened.
I think I know what happened.
I think they probably got stood
up. And you know what, Kay? You are okay.
Yeah, you are. That person, what do they know? They're the kind
what
of
a loss.
They're the kind of person who doesn't show up for dates that they themselves helped schedule. I think it's on them.
It's on them.
Got nothing
it's their
to do
problem.
With you, Kay.
You're great.
All right, this question comes from Alana, who writes, Dear John and Hank, why is it that when I pack my suitcase to go somewhere and I pack all my folded clothes in, they fit perfectly, but if I want to just toss my dirty clothes in there at the end of the trip, they don't fit unless I fold them. Aren't they the same size as when I put them in there before going bananas, Alana? Wait, probably going bananas, Alana.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, so... Well, this is a good question, but I think Hank would probably answer
well,
this
there's like
better.
A, there's
science
a science reason,
answer.
But there's like a functional reason, right? Which
but
is that,
because air.
That's I think that is actually both the science reason and the functional reason. Because Sarah taught me when we first started dating that the most efficient way to pack is actually to roll your clothes up.
Yeah, I don't always do that, though.
Now you don't, but you did back then, and I still always do it because it's so effective. Like, I guess your clothes are a little more wrinkly, which is the kind of knock
on it.
It
depends on how you roll up.
I'm not as you know, Sarah, I'm not the best roller,
I've evolved
roller of
packing
shirts.
Techniques.
Oh, you got a new, tell me
I got
about
a
it.
New technique.
What do we do now?
Well, I roll the things like exercise clothes, or t-shirts, pajamas, things like that.
Yeah.
But then I have my section for the flat fold for nicer stuff that needs to stay
to minimize
nice.
the crisp, the wrinkles, and what do you call that? crease. That's what I was looking for. So no cut special.
Creases haven't been very much of our lives during COVID.
I mean,
crease?
To be fair, I never spent a lot of time thinking about creases.
Yeah, yeah. I think you can. I don't know. I've seen John plenty of times throw all his dirty stuff in the suitcase, and it all fits in. You know what? If you want to do that, you have to leave extra space.
Yeah. Well, or you have to really, because it is
sit
an
on it.
Air
you got to get rid of the air.
If you sit on it
for
long enough.
Not with your toiletries in there.
Great advice.
Yeah.
Really key. Yes, do not sit on it with a gallon of milk inside of it.
Well, also don't pack a gallon of milk, but like, you know.
Yeah. I love that idea
of
like the bag goes through security and they're like, you can't have liquids more than 3.4 ounces. But also, why are you bringing a gallon of milk?
Yeah. Ugh.
Maybe you need a gallon of milk. Maybe you're really into getting swole and like you use a lot of milk. I tried to use young person slang, Sarah.
I use a lot of milk.
Ew. I don't even know what you do with it.
Yeah.
It is weird that we drink the milk of another mammal.
Oh gosh. And this is something that you can never get past.
I can't get past
drinking milk of a mammal. But somebody said that to me in high school, thinking it was very profound. And then I've proceeded to hear like thousands of people make this argument to me.
Okay. All right. Here's an art question. Let's move on. Here's an art question for you from Ray, who writes, "Dear John and Hank, how do I find people who want what I make?" This is a deep, deep, lifelong question, Ray. And from your question, I think you're like 12. So it's amazing that you're, or maybe 16.
Why?
Regardless. Because they identify themselves as a kid.
My art is not accepted amongst other calligraphers because I'm a kid. But my calligraphy isn't accepted in my fandoms because they don't want calligraphy. But the only type of art I can do is calligraphy. Calligraphy and characters, Ray.
So the question, how do I find people who want what I make, is a lifelong question for artists.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's one of the central questions. How do I connect what I, you know, the kind of the voice I want to share, the feeling I want to share with somebody who wants to receive it?
Right.
And I don't have an easy answer for that question because I still struggle with it.
Well, I feel like I want to question your statement that the only type of art I can do is calligraphy. The only type of art you currently feel comfortable with is calligraphy. And if you want to make calligraphy, great. And art is about making stuff for other people, but it's also about your own expression and what you want to do and make. So, you know, it's a balance, as John was saying, but I also think like, if you love making calligraphy, there is a lot of exploration you can do within that. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the next turn in calligraphy? Like, what can you do that's like a half step between calligraphy and things that are made that people in other fandoms like?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what if you thought, oh, I'm going to do this really amazing, badass calligraphy of... I don't know, Dungeons and Dragons or something.
Yeah, let's imagine what the fandom might be. Like, what if it's BTS, say? Like, what if it's a band?
What if you made this amazing calligraphic BTS decal that was, like, kind of interesting because it was this mashup between styles?
Maybe the calligraphy, even the way that it's written, starts to outline some of the faces or something. Or some iconic BTS image. I also have another idea.
Okay.
I think that's a great idea. Like, how do you take what you can already do and move it a half step toward
something else?
Something else.
Yeah.
So my first thought was with calligraphy especially, and I agree, Sarah, like, Ray, you can do lots of other kinds of art. It's just the place where you feel comfortable now is calligraphy. But with calligraphy especially, so much of it is, or so much of what I love about calligraphy on the internet a lot of times is when there is a real dissonance between the beauty of the calligraphy and what is being written. It's the same way I feel about needlepoint. Like Amy Cross Rosenthal had this throw pillow that was needlepointed and the needlepoint said, I hated every second of this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought that was right. So brilliant.
There's a lot of potential there of being very self-aware about the confines of traditional calligraphy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I also think that you could collaborate with other people, Ray. Mm. Like maybe you start something, make something with calligraphy and invite another artist you like mm-hmm. to change it, to mm-hmm. draw around it on top of it. Mm-hmm. Or vice versa. What if you found some other person's artwork you really liked and then played with it and added your own calligraphy to it?
Right. But I also think there's real value to just making. Like, I think that there is value to making and expressing yourself. And I think that is a large part of how we get better at making stuff.
Yeah.
And so as you make calligraphy, you will find yourself getting better at it. And also there will be this sort of ancillary benefit of getting closer and closer and finding more and more about how you want to express yourself in the world.
And that's part of the joy of being a younger person is that you don't necessarily need to share it far and wide, and that you can do all sorts of crazy things on your own without the pressure of being judged by other people. So, and you can sort of have time to develop artistically before you kind of come out to the world.
Right, absolutely. Which reminds me, actually, that today's podcast is brought to you by Ray's Calligraphy. Ray's Calligraphy, it's great. And it's only going to get better. You're up, Sarah.
That's great. I'm up for what?
You got to say, additionally, today's podcast is brought to you and then some other.
Oh, man, I wasn't prepared for this. This is too much pressure.
This is
today's episode of Dear John and Sarah is also brought to you by Wordle.
Wordle.
One small thing you can solve in a day.
Sometimes the only thing you can solve in a day. And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by that professor who just ate the salad. The professor who just ate the salad, just eating a salad in the front row, being a famous professor.
Yeah. And I think we could have Ray create a calligraphy statement that says, eat your salad loud. Oh, no, that sounds, well, anyway, yeah.
It's a no-cut special.
It's a no-cut special. It's too late. Can't take it back.
We are.
Let's just move on quickly.
We also have a Project for Awesome message to read from Miranda Hyduck. From NYC to Emily, happy anniversary, my love. Thank you for 3 beautiful years. You make me braver and better than I ever thought I could be. Sharing third things like this podcast or Star Wars or Manhole the Squirrel with you makes the world feel a bit more bearable. You're my favorite human, and I will always be here to kill the bugs and wash the dishes.
Aww.
That's very, very sweet.
That's so lovely.
That's another Project for Awesome perk is people buy basically advertising space on this podcast to tell people they love that they love them, or to share any message that they want with the world. So thank you so much for donating to the Project for Awesome, and also for apparently naming a squirrel Manhole after a joke in this podcast from years and years ago.
Lovely.
Yeah, you know, so that makes me so happy. Yeah. Like when people name their squirrels Alaska or something, that always makes me happy.
Yeah.
All right, Sarah, I think we have one.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. Let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, lime scale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, That's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
So listen, y'all, you've heard me tell a lot of stories about Policy Genius over the years. Policy Genius, just to be clear, is not an insurance company. It's a marketplace that helps people find and buy insurance. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. So I know we talk a lot about death on this podcast, and then we use that talk about death to talk about Policy Genius. But for real, for serious, you probably need life insurance, and Policy Genius is a great place to get it. Check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. Policy Genius, because you will leave behind people who love and need you. That's not their tagline, but, you know, I like it.
Time for one more question before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC.
Shall I read it?
Sure. How about this one from Shelby?
Dear John and Sarah, I really like video games. I love the art and the storytelling and the music and the fact that my hands are occupied. It's like a movie, but I get to do stuff. Unfortunately, I've never been very good at them. I didn't play many as a kid, and as such, I don't have the skills a lot of game fans do. I like playing on easy or beginner mode so that I can actually progress through the story, but I can't get over the feeling that I am cheating. I know these modes are specifically designed for people more interested in stories like myself than the gameplay itself, but I still feel guilty. How can I get over this feeling of being a fake gamer and just enjoy it? Coming around the mountain, Shelby.
Well, a few things. First off, I don't know if this is the same Shelby who is a video game journalist and makes girlfriend reviews. Probably not, but that is one of my favorite YouTube channels. So
yeah.
In case it is, hi Shelby. And if it isn't, still hi Shelby. So I love video games too, and I am also terrible at them. I'm terrible at them for other reasons. Like, I'm mostly terrible at them because I have this spatial intelligence deficit that makes it really difficult for me to know where I am in space, which is a big disadvantage when you're playing a video game and you don't know. Like, when I play video games with Henry, he's always like, Dad, it's to the left. It's to the left. It's behind you. It's still behind you. And I can never remember that stuff, so that's hard for me. And so I always play on beginner mode. And the video game I love the most in the world, even though it's a stupid, terrible video game, is the FIFA series, where I just get to play soccer. And I've been playing that game for 11 years, Shelby, and I still play on semi-professional mode, because if I go up to professional, it's just too hard and I don't enjoy it as much. I get stressed out and forget what buttons do what and all that, all those feelings, and I want to avoid those feelings. So my feeling about it is that, you know, there are different, like, the wonderful thing about video games is that you can play them in different ways. And you can even play them in ways that the developers didn't necessarily intend, but right, can still be really beautiful. Like
the Fortnite pacifist.
You can play Fortnite as a pacifist. I remember doing this as a kid with my brother, where we would play this NASCAR game, but we would run the cars backwards and to get up to 180 miles an hour so we could see a 360 mile an hour crash. Head-on crash. And, like, obviously that's not something that the game developers designed the game to do, but it was really fun for us. And so remembering that, that you are the co-creator of this game, and that the developers of it, the people who made the video game, want you, need you to co-create the game with you,
right,
I think is really important, because that's the moment where you can be like, oh, and so I get to do it however I want.
Right. And also, you know, there are so many different kinds of video games, but there's also a lot of video games that haven't been made yet. Mm. And I also think, you know, you're voicing a feeling that tells me that there's a lot more that video games can be or do. And, you know, so I think, first of all, it's just about your mindset, right? Like, you're not playing this, I'm assuming you're not doing this in public or like with a lot of friends who are giving you a hard time. This is just something that you're doing.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes from this feeling of like, well, the professional gamers, and you know, it's a big world now of professional gamers. They're really good at video games. Both the people who are in tournaments and a lot of the people who stream on Twitch are really, really good at whatever game they're playing. Mm-hmm. But that's not the only way even to stream on Twitch and have an audience. Like, you can be like, I was living evidence for many years that you could have a YouTube series where you play video games and you're terrible. Like, I, you know,
I didn't keep John up at night.
The AFC Wimbledon sponsorship was funded for like the first 3 or 4 years entirely by me being really bad at FIFA, but pretty good at telling stories. And so nobody watched for the FIFA, but they watched for the story. And I think that, you know, reminding yourself that you may not be good at the video game in the narrow way that certain people define good, but you can still be really good at the video game in the sense of being a good collaborator with the developers.
Right. And you could also, if you wanted, do some little experiments to try to free up your mind a little bit about the process. Ooh. Like what if you know, like the Fortnite pacifist or whatever you're playing, like what if you run the, you know, only run the wrong way or do the wrong thing, you know, the so-called wrong thing. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know, I'm not much of a gamer, or and by much of, I mean not. But I respect video games in general. And I just think maybe you just need to do some exercises that like make you realize and understand more deeply that it's just a platform to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, like maybe you would even impress the developers by like, what's the weirdest, most nonsensical thing you could do in a given scenario?
Yeah. Well, one of the things about video games now is that sometimes you can get trophies, like the developers do see it coming, and you can get trophies for doing very unexpected things, which I think is kind of lovely and cool. But anyway, we wish you all the fun in the world playing games,
yes,
Shelby.
Yes, enjoy it.
And you're not a fake gamer. Nobody is, except maybe Sarah.
Fair enough.
Well, Sarah, it's time for the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. I'm not sure how much Mars news we have, realistically. I think we might have
I don't have any Mars news.
I do have some news from AFC Wimbledon, however, which is that yesterday, as we are recording this, AFC Wimbledon played Gillingham, one of the ongoing longest-term debates in the United Kingdom, and which has been a nation for over 1,000 years, is that nobody on Earth knows how to pronounce Gillingham. I don't know if you know that. Even the people
even the players.
Indeed. I've made this fact up, but it seems to have convinced you. Great.
Sure.
So nobody knows the Gillingham or Gillingham situation. What we do know is that in that game against Gillingham or Gillingham, we did not win. Because we have not won a game in the league in months, plural. So we tied 0-0, which would be fine, except that Gillingham or Gillingham is one of the only four teams worse than us. And so we really needed to win that game. AFC Wimbledon currently sit in 20th place, one spot above the relegation zone. So once again, on the edge of, you know, relegation, like we are every season. It's super frustrating. May it turn around soon.
That's great.
Sarah wasn't listening.
I wasn't.
She was looking something up.
I was. I was trying to figure out something Mars related to share with you.
Great. And I like what you found.
Okay. So I can't tell you anything strictly educational or useful, but I found this poem by Wynne Cooper.
Yeah.
Titled Mars Poetica.
Yeah.
And I've never read it before.
I'm excited.
So I'm just going to share it right now. Imagine you're on Mars, looking at Earth, a swirl of colors in the distance. Tell us what you miss most or least. Let your feelings rise to the surface. Skim that surface with a tiny net. Now you're getting the hang of it. Tell us your story slantwise, streetwise, in the disguise of an astronaut in his suit. Tell us something we didn't know before, how words mean things we didn't know we knew.
Oh, I love that last line.
Yeah.
Words mean things we didn't know we knew.
That's very nice.
That's lovely. Well, Sarah, thank you for podding with me. Thanks to everybody for listening. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna-Medish. It's produced by Rosiana Hals-Rojas. The music that you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. Our social media communicator is Julia Bloom. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.